trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Welcome to episode 53 of the In Tech We Trust podcast. And I don't think we want to sing happy birthday, do we? No, we definitely don't. But yeah, it's been a year. I got the old email from Podbean.
Woohoo!
Yay!
I'm going to have a cup of coffee.
Yeah. Does it feel like a year to anybody, actually? Because to me, it totally does not feel like it's been a year.
No, it felt like we had, it just feels like something we're supposed to do every week. But also, it seems like it went by really, really fast.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
I know, but it seems like ages since I've done a secret Windows phone app.
Oh, well, yeah, true. And it is ages.
Oh, and I was, oh my God, I was going to do something special for the show and I haven't done it.
Ah,
it's selfish.
Oh, because you're special ed.
Oh my God, I am. I have to tell you guys something that I've been doing the last couple of days. It's funny. We'll get to it later.
Okay, well, you know what I'm thinking is since Hans left, it's been totally different, hasn't it? I mean, I know the organization on the back end has been, let's just call it different. We managed to churn something out every week, which is a minor miracle almost. And we still apparently have people listening, which again is a minor miracle. But you know what? It's a blast, actually, usually.
Yeah.
And I'm still enjoying it.
I've liked it that we've kind of brought in some guests here and there. One thing that blew me away was how many people came up to me at VMworld and said, "I love the show."
Really?
I haven't had a chance to really have a debrief from VMworld. I've been so busy lately, but or I've been on planes or whatever it was. But the crazy part about it was that I'm like, I probably had 25 people come up and say, "Oh my God, we love the show," or "We
really
listen to it." And I'm like, I had no expectation of that ever.
Yeah,
I never thought I would ever meet anybody who actually listened to the show, except like the three of us.
I know.
Even when I was joining SolidFire, a couple of the guys I work with are like, "Oh, we listen to the show every week. We religiously, we love it." I'm like, "You gotta be kidding me! People actually want to hear what we have to say."
Who'd have thunk? Honestly,
at your own detriment.
I did have requests to bring back secret Windows phone apps, and then I haven't done it.
I'm not surprised. They were awesome. They really were. But you know what, Gabriel, hearing feedback like that kind of makes me like, oh, man, we really should put more effort into it.
Can we step our game? Well, here's the thing, too.
Up the game, yeah.
I think that, when nobody's going to pay us $20,000.
Why not?
I wish they would.
Yeah.
But, I think what makes it fun and light is that it's lighthearted. And we're not super – I mean, we're serious about, we voice our opinions, we have our discussions and whatnot, and we all have a unique viewpoint that we bring to the table, but it doesn't feel like it's ever forced, right? And and I think that's the benefit or the beauty of it, is that we do kind of have a good rapport as a group of people, and we all bring something a little bit different to the table when we talk about the things that are going on. And I think that's probably what brings people back or has people listening, right?
I think what brings people back is when we disagree and fight.
Well, I mean, we would have to look at the numbers since Hans left. disagreements were. It was like Hulk smash. Argh! And I'm like, okay. And then it's all about pushing buttons too. So,
hey, you know what? I like to comment about guests as well, and I think we need to get a little bit better at making sure we've probably got a guest on each week going forward. Because like this week, what a shame not to have a guest on. Actually, there's so many amazing people out there with like really insightful views on stuff that we really should be hooking in. So I don't know whether it's worth reaching out to some of the listeners. If you want to ping us on Twitter and say, hey, you want to get involved and maybe, come on as a guest on the show, reach out. We're totally open to stuff like that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I definitely think I want to hear from, users and listeners and other groups that are out there who want to talk about the things that we're doing.
Pundits!
Because it's all about community again, right? And I don't know, do you mind if we pivot on that thought of community? Because I know, Mark, you were at John Troyer's event just at the weekend gone. The Reckoning or Tech Reckoning 2015, which was all like a massive community event. Quite keen to get your thoughts on how that went down.
Oh, it was really interesting. A lot of fun. I think John and his wife Catherine Kat did a really great job putting this together. I talked to John afterwards over, and he had some difficulty getting the people to show up that he thought he would or wanted to. I mean, organizing things has to be just this great exercise in herding cats, and so it was a moving target. But what it turned out to be was really a terrific. Like a career seminar for people that are involved in the enterprise technology community and people are involved in social media around that. The second day, Monday, had a variety of different things, and there was a broad range of guests on a broad range of topics, and some were not that great, and some were really terrific. And so it was great. It was great to see people in the community. It was really fun to be out in Half Moon Bay. What a terrific location. We even got a little rain out there on Monday. That was kind of nice, you know, because we don't get rain here.
Speaking to a British guy, rain was kind of nice, honestly.
Yeah, no.
That's like foreign to me. So on the topic of herding cats and struggling to get some of the people there, are we talking about attendees there rather than people that were on the roster to speak?
I think some of both. Okay. Actually, okay. I think there were people that had told John that I'm not sure about this, and I don't want to tell stories out of school, right? So uh-huh. I think there were some people that said they were going to come and then canceled or weren't able to make it. You know, the event started on a Sunday. It was a Sunday and Monday event. But, you know, it's really great running into some of these people, you know, and I only see them at the shows. I didn't see, you know, for instance, Alistair Cook, you know, from the V Brown Bag. Mm-hmm. I didn't see him at VMworld, but he was there, so I got a chance to spend time with him. Mark Toomey was there, and it's always fun to talk to him. You know,
hey, how was Mark's talk? How was his presentation?
I missed it.
Oh, no.
Okay. I did. Yeah, I know. I missed it.
You missed his beautiful Hawaiian shirt?
I saw his beautiful Hawaiian shirt. I was there Sunday. I don't know if he wore it both days. I'm trying to remember if I saw him in the same shirt Monday or Tuesday. But I had some other things that I needed to attend to Monday morning, so I wasn't there for the morning session on Monday. So my synopsis of the event does have that hole in it where I missed the stuff on Monday morning.
So what was the highlight of it for you?
So there were a number of highlights, but one of the most interesting highlights was a woman named Francine Hardaway that I've never heard from before. And she lives out there in Half Moon Bay, and she works with different startups. And she's definitely an out-of-the-box thinker. She used to be a university professor. I can't remember what her thing was in. And just everything about it was kind of like, here's a small senior woman talking to us, you know, about the technology area with authority and with great humor. And I don't know how else to say it. I think all these things are available online. People should look at Francine's presentation, I think. I thought it was terrific and wonderful. Robert Scoble came in, and he was kind of like the last guy and last batter up. And he was just talking about trends in technology. And, you know, he's really good at that. And so his presentation on what's going on and what's changing in technology and how are people using it, that was really a lot of fun. There are a number of good ones. I liked the session on Sunday a lot, which was just a big networking session for the most part. Really lots of fun there. And so there were good presentations, there were good sessions, there was really good interaction. And I was so proud of John, actually, for putting this whole thing together. And throughout, you know, as the MC and the organizer of the event, you know, as he was keeping this thing going, you just watch how he applies perspective and realism and, you know, cuts through stuff real easily. You know, he's a special person. And you know, even though he's not at VMware anymore, we're still lucky to really have him in the community. I think the guy's a unique talent.
So should we realistically expect more of these kind of events from him in the future?
I hope so. Yeah, I hope he, you know, he had sponsorship for it, right? So let's see. I'm trying to remember the sponsors. It was Simplivity, Revelo, Nutanix, Cisco, and I'm leaving one out. That's terrible. But, you know, there you go.
Taco Bell.
Yeah, it was not Taco Bell. But so he had sponsors for it, and it was terrific. There were some people that were missing that would have been really great to have had, you know, both you guys, for instance. It would have been great to have had Val Berkovici from NetApp there. Oh, I think yeah. He would have added a lot to it. But it was terrific. You know, people that you don't get to see, you know, some people that I didn't see at VMworld that I got to see there. Keith Townsend was one, and There were others too. It was really a lot of fun.
How many people do you reckon were there actually, Mark? Just rough.
Oh, I would say 100.
Okay. Yeah, because it's a lot more intimate on that kind of a scale, isn't it? It's not like trying to spot somebody among 10, 15,000 people at VMworld. You know, right. You can see, hey, make a beeline for somebody, plenty of time to chat, all that kind of stuff. It's totally different dynamics. I mean, I think I've said it on previous podcasts, I'm quite a big fan of these smaller events these days.
Yeah, it was great. I'm really looking forward to Tech Unplugged next week in Amsterdam, you know, something that'll be sort of a similar size. Different agenda, but similar size. So that'll really be cool.
No, I agree. I think that those are the types of shows that really kind of allow you to really interact on a one-on-one basis or in small groups with people that really are passionate about what an event like that brings to the table, right? Because, you know, at VMworld, for me, I mean, there's not a lot I go for anymore from the technology standpoint. It tends to be it's my family reunion for my tech nerd friends, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and Mark, you and I and several others had like the best like 3.5-hour dinner ever while we were there. And I think that those kind of opportunities to have those smaller group interactions are not afforded so much at VMworld because there's so much competition for mindshare and resources and whatnot. So it makes it a lot tougher, you know, if something that's smaller like that. And I mean, look at it this way. It's like the people who went to the very first Tech Reckoning, they're kind of the plank owners of Tech Reckoning. Right. And when you launch a ship in the Navy, you become a plank owner. You own a plank of the ship, you know, and it means that you were there on the first day as it launched forward and brought its life into the sea. And in this respect, you know, the people who went to the very first Tech Reckoning are part of something that's fairly special and fairly unique in this industry. The birth of an event, the birth of a platform. Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was interesting. There were people here from, you know, Australia and New Zealand, you know, like Alistair, for instance, and Patrick. I'm trying to remember Patrick's last name. Terrible at names, right? It's just awful. EMC guy. I don't know if he's still at EMC or not. Really great sense of humor. Really lots and lots of fun. Big bearded guy. Jeez, I give up. I just give up. Patrick Kelso.
Okay, right.
Yeah, I don't know if either of you guys know Patrick Kelso. What a good guy, you know, really. And it's so much fun to meet somebody in this kind of context where it's just not a wall of noise around you all the time, you know, and you get to, you know, you talking about the industry, things that you've done, things that you want to do. And, you know, it's really enjoyable.
Well, congratulations, John Troyer and co. And Mark, you're a plank owner for the Reckoning or Tech Reckoning, whatever the name of the conference is. Magic, good stuff. And actually, good luck to Enrico Signoretti for Tech Unplugged next week, 23rd and 24th in Amsterdam, if you're around in the area. So let's see if we can talk about any news this week, guys. Not a massive amount of news again. The only kind of really news event, EMC and storage related. So there was a piece on, was it SiliconANGLE? I think you pointed it out, Gabriel. EMC announcing their server SAN module. So I think like kind of their software-defined storage play in Scale.io, which, you know, in my opinion, seems to have played second fiddle almost to vSAN, but their software-defined storage play pre-packaged with some white box so you don't have to bring your own hardware. I think
pre-validated hardware control, you know, hardware list, right? And that's the best way. I mean, for all of the talk of us being software defined and how awesome that is and just taking the software and throwing on a piece of commodity stuff that we went down to Fry's or Newegg and bought, put it on. The reality is the supportability of a platform like that is challenging. And that's why, you know, unless you have applications there that really understand the fact that the underlying physical infrastructure doesn't matter, which I think are truly few and far between, there are nuances with different pieces of physical hardware and technology that need to be adjusted for. And that's why you take a what we would consider a software-defined platform and place it on a piece of physical hardware and package that because it's an exercise in delivering an appliance. And therefore, it gives you a lot larger potential total addressable marketplace outside of the kind of highly specialized, very cutting-edge groups that, you know, have maybe, you know, 100 of the best Linux minds on the planet around that can kind of work around those issues.
Hey, so just at a kind of higher level, what's the deal, or do you have an opinion on what the deal is between Scale.io and vSAN and the whole, is this just another level of the VMware versus EMC shenanigans that's going on at the moment? I shouldn't call it shenanigans, actually. Just the whole thing that's going on between parent and child.
Given that I don't work for the Federation,
yeah,
I have absolutely no insight into what's going on there. I mean, I think the reality is that EMC as an and the EMC Federation of Companies, they have a very large product portfolio with a lot of different types of overlap. And I think that, you look at things like, their ownership in VMware and VMware's push for vSAN and the maturation of that product. You look at what they want or could do with Scale.io. You look at things like DSSD and Extreme.io and then also Isilon and VMAX and all these other products. Like,
that is a portfolio and a half, isn't it?
It's a humongous. I mean, they can capture every piece of the storage market that exists today. But the reality is that for every little piece you take from one, you're cannibalizing one of the other pieces. At some point, you kind of have too many products out there, and I think a streamlining or a culling of kind of like some of the legacy technologies in order. But also the reality is that, hey, if I've been selling VMAX for or Symmetrix for the last 30 years, and there's a significant amount of run rate business still attached to that, well, maybe I slow roll some of these other products. Maybe I don't put so much effort and information behind something like a Scale.io when I know that it can compete and take away from my much higher margin products that I've already fully baked.
It's so political, isn't it? To kind of run an organization and a bunch of business units like that, or even if you're in the sales force, the number of technologies that you have to learn and the number of partner ecosystems and channels that you need to kind of try and develop and stuff is a whole beast. And you compare it to somebody, maybe like yourself, so at SolidFire or at Tagile or at Pure or somewhere like that, where it's effectively, take this to mean what it does, but a one product company almost. Totally, totally different approach. And I mean, I know just as an individual, right, where I'd rather work between the two. I don't know. Gosh. I mean, they've got everything at EMC, but I guess that brings all of the challenges with it. I do remember, the first time I saw Scale.io, had the first presentation on it, I thought it looked really good. And, when I originally compared it against vSAN, I thought that Scale.io looked better, hypervisor independent and all of that kind of stuff. But I rarely hear anything about Scale.io these days.
My internal joke is that the largest customer of Scale.io is Matt Cowger.
No. Yeah, well.
But, no, I mean, I love you, Matt.
Yeah, I'll tell you for that.
But, no, I mean, I think that, it is a challenging space to inject yourself into. And the realities are is the software-defined X, be it networking, storage, or data center, is a very tough sell. And, when the vast majority of the customer base that exists out there are that SMB, SME type organization that has between 3 and 15 ESXi hosts and maybe 200 terabytes, 300 terabytes of storage under management, hell, a VMX is really easy to install and leverage in that organization.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, on the topic of software defined, right, just another reach out to any listeners, right? So we've got a couple of discussions going on or potentially going on our LinkedIn group. So go and check us out on LinkedIn. Quite keen to hear if anybody has kosher, bona fide numbers or, well, no, not numbers isn't right, but kind of keen to get a feel on real world NSX deployments and vSAN deployments, because we hear numbers all the time, like around the 2000 mark for NSX and around the 2000 mark for vSAN as well. But how much is that skewed by, ELAs and stuff like that? Kind of like to get a finger on how many real-world production implementations are there of NSX and vSAN. But if you don't have, numbers like that to hand and you don't have any inside information, then if you know of customers that are deploying them in the real world, go check us out on LinkedIn and chime in on the conversation there, because I'm quite keen to know whether this kind of stuff really is picking up or not. Is everybody really still using VNX and Symmetrix and stuff out there? Or is there an upswell, not an upswell, but an uptick in anything that's software defined at the moment, because I don't know, is it all still hype? I don't have the answers to that. I'm quite keen to hear from others.
Yeah, me too.
Right. That was you, listeners. It's not us. We're not going to respond to that.
It's all about the community, right?
Yeah.
You know what, though? Talking about EMC being massive and having a massive portfolio, right? Bit of a pivot onto some of the more business-related news from the week. Sadly, okay, again, there's talk that HP might be culling another ton of jobs. I think the latest number doing the rounds is when they split...
30,000.
30,000.
And like, mostly people in the services organization.
Yes,
so,
yeah.
I mean, and you don't hear so much that, you know, hey, this is the outsource group. I'm really... You know, it's like for a company with that, when I entertained going to work for them, this is like 2013 or 2012, had 305,000 people. Uh-huh. If you look at it over the course of the last, you know, couple years, the slate of job reductions has been close to 85,000 people total.
Yeah, so they're saying that potentially 85,000 gone under Meg's regime, though I did notice that didn't say how many were brought in, because quite often, you know, when you hit right. big numbers like this, they hire in a ton of other, not as many usually, but they still hire in on the thousands as well. It kind of not doesn't balance it right.
Yeah,
but
no,
it takes the edge
off. Same thing happened. You know, the same thing happened with, you know, Cisco and their rifts as well. That, you know, well, yeah, they're going to lay off 10,000 people, but you don't realize that they may have 9,000 open headcount. It's just
they're going to hiring
an split. Adjustment of resources, right? But when it comes to HP, I don't know how many of those 85,000 jobs are going to be re-leveraged.
Yeah. I know one of the articles that I read said that there was going to be a $2.7 billion restructuring charge. And I wasn't quite certain what a restructuring charge was. I wondered, you know, there's obviously compensation packages and things like that. But, I mean, surely... I haven't done any math on this, but 30,000 people going, I mean, that's not going to be 2.7 billion, surely. I don't know, actually.
Some expensive employees.
Let me just bring up Windows Calculator here. Calc, where's that gone? So 30,000.
Yeah, Windows 10, where has Calc gone? Because when I type Calc into the little search bar down there,
well,
it doesn't,
you know,
show up.
And it depends on if they multiply that across multiple years and all of that, right? Who knows how they do this stuff. I don't know what the accounting practices are for this. It does seem like an awful lot of money.
Hey, but so, yeah, I mean, I should have been able to do that in my head, really. So 30,000 employees, and if you say 100,000 per employee, that is 3 billion. So not far off 2.7 billion.
Yeah, there you go.
Good grief. I mean, you've got to be looking to make some massive operational savings if it's going to cost you the better part of $3 billion just to lay them off.
Yes. So what's the part of the business that we think is getting hatcheted the most? Is it the services business, Gabriel?
Yeah, within the enterprise group. So not the printers and PCs business.
Right, but if it's services, it probably doesn't mean servers, and it probably doesn't mean storage, and doesn't mean networking. It probably means, you know, the...
Is there still a hang-up from that massive overpayment they made on autonomy? Because is autonomy, is that part of the services group?
Honestly, I don't know.
No, me neither.
I mean, but you know, when you waste $8 billion on a product that nobody wants...
Yeah.
Well, maybe two or three people wanted. That's... Gosh, that's hard, man.
It is, yeah.
It doesn't matter how big your organization. I mean, even Google, Facebook, Salesforce, you can't lose that kind of, you know, capital.
No.
And expect that to be like an easy thing to do, especially when you're so beholden to shareholders. You know, I think it's funny because we kind of bash on Dell a little bit about them going private, you know, and the D meaning debt. But, you know, they don't have to have that kind of short-term.
Oh, it gives you a freedom,
plan.
Doesn't it?
Yeah,
yeah.
Don't have to spend, you know, living quarter to quarter.
Yeah,
and it frees them up from a certain standpoint to be a little more long-term focused, or a little more, you know, what I would call Chinese in their focus, right? Where they think 5 to 10 years out instead of like 5 to 3 weeks out.
I like that Chinese in focus. Okay.
Right. I mean, it's a longer-term
long game,
play, right? The long game is there. And that freedom affords you to do that. Now, on the flip side, it also makes it very much more challenging because now you're beholden to a much smaller subset of investors. And at some point, people, like I say, will always want to get paid back. And they can exert a lot more pressure than the millions of shareholders when it's only half a dozen or so investment firms.
Yep, I agree. Hey, on the restructuring front as well, or the layoff front, is restructuring becoming synonymous with layoffs these days? I don't know. But much smaller scale, I see QLogic are in the press as well, potentially looking to lay off a bunch of their workforce. I guess the question I have around QLogic, and I don't want to be overly harsh on them, right? But when do you get to a point, or do you ever get to the point where you just shoot a business and say, look, you know what? If you're not going to do a 180 or a 360, fully pivot and look down different avenues, you've not got a long game. You know, I mean, the kind of businesses that they seem to be in, the kind of markets and what have you, that the long-term outlook is just, it's grim.
It's well, grim, you know, but there's also the thing that Emulex was acquired by Avago or whatever, right? And what those guys are doing is they're taking all of the cost out of what it takes to run the Emulex business, right? So now QLogic is having to compete with, you know, its old competitor that's been basically washed through, and a lot of the cost just taken out of that business. So they probably are seeing more price competition than what they've seen in a long time. That's my guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, also, there is still a significant amount of annual run rate business in the just pure Fibre Channel market. Let's call it, for the adapter space, let's call it globally $250 million. You know, and that's almost 100% profit. I mean, your development cycle for a Fibre Channel adapter is 18 to 24 months to spin a chip and get it up and running and bake it in and adjust any additional bits and pieces that need to go in there. Fibre Channel as a protocol is not that, you know, it's not evolving that much outside of just kind of like additional speeds. And it's, you know, it still has a rather significant install base. As much as we may like to talk about iSCSI and NFS being kind of the waves of the future, the reality is you get these large telecos that have, you know, between 80 and 120,000 Fibre Channel ports. They're not going to flip that stuff overnight, and they're still going to kind of keep the care and feeding of that infrastructure going.
No, I agree with that, but with what Mark said there about Avago, Avago, whatever we call them, consuming Emulex and potentially taking, you know, a lot of the cost of out of running Emulex out of the equation, does that not then potentially negate what you were saying about the Fibre Channel business? Yes, it's just ticking over and what have you, but it's all margin. Has that dynamic changed overnight with the Emulex situation?
No, because Avago is going to continue to sell the Fibre Channel stuff to the OEMs. They're going to take that thing, they're going to strip out all of the waste or all of the fluff. I mean, think about this. Emulex was selling Ethernet and doing okay, but the reality is the Fibre Channel business paid for everything else, right? Mm-hmm. So if I look at Emulex or if I look at QLogic as a company and I say, what paid the bills for them to branch out into the other spaces? It was the Fibre Channel business. It was that guaranteed $125, $150 million a year that you really didn't have to spend a whole lot of time and effort on. And maybe you only need 100 people on staff to facilitate that business. You know, and at that rate, you look at it, if it's 100 and, you know, maybe you have 100 people on staff and maybe it's pulling in $125 million a year in business, that's a really good return on your investment.
I see that, yeah.
If I have for every one worker I have generates $1.25 million, damn, I take that all every day of the week. And that's the cost, and that's the dynamic involved there. There's some intellectual property. There's some other products. I mean, think about this. You know, QLogic and Emulex, they both had different entire different lines of products. Outside of the Fibre Channel business, they both had branched out into Ethernet and tried to compete against the likes of Intel and whatnot, right? It's very hard to compete against Intel or Broadcom because those companies have huge mover advantages and whatnot, right? So as you're trying to break into Ethernet with your value that you're adding on top, but you can't compete at the price point that they do, and you don't have the same kind of marketing muscle, and you can't sacrifice you can't dig into your, if I'm Intel, I can lose money selling into the Ethernet space because I make a ton of money on the chip space. If you're just a kind of a single product focus, you don't have that same kind of wiggle room. it makes it very difficult to compete in that particular space. You know, Broadcom, Intel, they dominate that Ethernet side of the house. And then, you know, that leaves everybody else kind of fighting for the little bits and scraps around the Fibre Channel market. And InfiniBand is a third portion.
Hey, so totally different kind of business then, another pivot here, away from something that's just run rate ticking over to another kind of market that is potentially growing. So into the DevOps space, I see that Chef just got a round of $40 million. So they've had six rounds of funding now. So in the growing, burgeoning, potentially DevOps space, right? Chef have taken $137 million in six rounds. And I think they're at about 200, 250 employees. Mind you, of course, don't know whether they're making any money. Certainly probably not creaming it in like you would just on a Fibre Channel business. But just from your guys' experience, kind of customers you talk to, do you have any kind of a feel as to whether or not customers are starting to implement DevOps practices, DevOps tool sets? And if they are, do we know if any of them are actually paying for any of the tools?
I think yes and yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm not close to being around DevOps, but when I hear people talk, I do feel like there's real business there, and it is, and people are spending. Yeah.
There's a lot of potential revenue to be made in that space. And you know, it's not just so much around licensing of the software and whatnot, but the consulting spaces, the, you know, coming in to help and work with people. And the reality is it's a much more forward-looking market. I mean, the whole concept of the ITIL model is kind of dead.
Oh, thank goodness.
You know, I mean, it's like we want SLAs and, you know, come on, chill. Really, dude? Was this 2005? Now, the reality is, though, is that for a good number of customers out there, that model still works for them, and it's what they're comfortable with and what they know. And they, you know, maybe they have a need. It's funny, I had this conversation with my boss today. Maybe they only need to have four code pushes a year. For them, that, you know, that older model works just fine. For those organizations where they're trying to push code in what we would consider legitimate continuous integration delivery, that they're pushing code on a daily basis, then the DevOps model is the only model that's going to work for them.
Yeah.
Because the other model is completely broken and cannot service them in any fashion. And so, you know, in that respect, it's like, know your business and know what's going to work and know what's going to give you that competitive advantage. And at that point, choose that. And then spend money on making that work for you. And that's why Chef and Puppet and Ansible and SaltStack and all these others are in business. PuppetConf had, what, like 200 people? There was a PuppetConf by the numbers. I mean, the first conference they had, like in 2011, had something like 300 or 400 people at it. The one they just recently had 7,000.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's real. It's legit, right?
Yeah, I mean, conferences are conferences, right? But if you back that up by the fact that Chef and Puppet Labs' first quarter results this year were the best quarters either company has ever recorded. So that's trending in the right direction there. But you comment earlier about saying, you know, it's not necessarily all in just licenses, right? Some of it's in consulting fees and things like that. I love this comment. I've just looked it up on the Register, right? So somebody's made a comment to the Register's article titled Chef to Take DevOps Mainstream with $40 million Funding Round. The comment... So this guy says he's been a Chef customer for the past 5 years. My Chef slogan is, Chef makes the easy stuff hard and the hard stuff impossible. So they could be milking it in consulting fees if that is the case then. And I don't want to be harsh to Chef. I don't have experience with it. But I don't know, it just feels like some of these tools, right, and some of this DevOpsy stuff, is it a little bit OpenStack-esque, you know, where we've talked in the past that in order to deploy OpenStack you need some of the greatest Linux minds on the planet to do it right. Is it a similar play or is it a similar game in the DevOps space, do you think?
You know, I think it's you know, I guess that was the terminology, horses for courses. Mm-hmm. If you're a 100% Windows shop, then you know what? Maybe that level of automation and integration isn't really going to be for you. Or it's going to, you know, leverage PowerShell, leverage some other tools that are out there. You're trying to force something that is definitely more, you know, future data center looking, or, you know, future workload looking, and shove that level of practices down into your organization. It may be a bit of a challenge. And so I think it's really it comes to organizations that really understand where the benefit is for how they automate, how they use, you know, that approach where it's programmable, repeatable, automated, and persistent, right? You know, and you kind of push this technology forward and you get a benefit out of it. And it's like we all like to say, hey, let's automate as much as possible because it's going to make ourselves lives so much easier at scale. If I only have, you know, 5 hosts and 100, 200 VMs, you know, it's awesome if I started automating at day one because it just makes my job really simple. But the reality is those organizations tend to not have that kind of level of sophistication. And so, you know, you'll get people that's like, oh, yeah, Chef's the hardest thing I've ever seen. And you'll get others that's like, yeah, it's just not sophisticated enough for us to use at the scale and direction we need. Oh, I can only service 1,000 machines with this platform. I can't do that. I have 10,000 machines. It's you know, it's kind of like your mileage may vary based on your organization.
And that's always the case, though, isn't it, right?
No, and that's, yeah, I mean, it's like, hello, here I am, Captain Obvious.
Yeah. Cool, okay. Well, you know what, gents, that is all that I've got on the agenda for today. Don't know if anybody has anything else.
No. Oh, I had something that was kind of fun that I've been working on.
Oh, yeah?
It has nothing to do with technology, though. It's kind of like old technology, automotive technology, and it has to do with, you know, a little bit of sustainability.
Shoot.
You know, some of you know that I've got, you know, I redid our front yard last year. We put in a drought tolerant thing with all kinds of interesting plants, mounds, and, you know, with a design, a construction company come out, and it cost us, you know, a lot of money, right, to do this. So this summer I decided, well, let's get rid of the grass in the back and I'll do it myself and save a lot of money. So it turns out one of the things that's hardest to deal with is just getting rid of the dirt.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, like recycling. We've got curbside recycling here in San Jose, and we've got yard trimming waste, right? And you can take a roll of sod and stick it out there, and they'll pick that up and throw it away. But what do you think grass looks like after it's been not watered for a year and it's sort of been dug up and piled up? There's nothing left, right? There's nothing left. But there's dirt balls where all the roots are. And the stuff is really hard because we got soil like clay here. And so I built a screen using hardware fabric and I was beating on it with goalie hockey sticks and stuff, trying to get it to all break up, right? And you bust it up as much as you can. I got piles of dirt, you know, that's gone through the sifter in the backyard. And I put the stuff out on the curb and they wouldn't take it. They said, this is all dirt. I said, my ass, it's dirt. It's like roots. It's what's left of the yard. And they say, yeah, but look at it. It's dirt. And it had wood chips in there and stuff. I said, at least half of this is wood chips. Of course, the wood chips are all covered in dirt dust. So they all look like dirt. And anyway, you know, I called. They had a supervisor come out. I got in an argument with him in the street. And so while I'm arguing... So I'm arguing with the guy. I just said, you know what? Just forget about it. I'll take care of it right here. Because so all of a sudden, I just got this great freaking idea of how I was going to separate, you know, the dirt from the roots. So I have this whole big pile of dirt out in the street, right? And I got on my car and just started, like, doing miniature donuts and, you know, spinning my wheels and, you know, skidding into it. And
you
just
can do that with a Yugo?
I don't have a Yugo. This is my Infiniti, right? This is my gray Infiniti that's dirt-colored. So I'm out there. It is now. It was then, and it is now even more. Right. So I'm out there like rolling my car around like a pig wallowing in the mud, except this is my car, like, you know, tires smashing all this stuff. It just pulverized the crap out of everything. So my tip of the week is that if you're going to be doing your lawn and doing it drought tolerant and you want to separate all this stuff, get ready to, you know, to have like a party and put on like an auto show outside your house in the street. Just have people drive all over the crap of it.
You should sell that as a service, actually.
Oh, okay, I should.
Dirt reduction is a service.
Well, the thing that I forgot to mention is that if you want to have dirt hauled and sent to a landfill, it's really expensive. Yeah. Right?
So I know.
It's easy to get dirt because people just want to give what they have away, right? You know, if you go on Craigslist, right, and you look for free dirt, you'll find all kinds of it. You know, yeah, we have 40 yards of dirt. We have 5,000 yards of dirt. You know, and all these different – we won't – you know, we'll send a truck to your house. Yeah. That's because they can't throw it away, right? And I was just trying to do it through, you know, recycling. And they wouldn't take it. So, you know, if you're gonna mess with dirt, prepare to get your car dirty.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. I had
the exact same thing happen. We did a bunch of work in the backyard. Thankfully, I have a slope. I have a street-to-street lot and a giant slope that has a lot of, like, you know, trees or plants and stuff like that, then I was able to take that dirt and spread it out across those. But otherwise, it's like, you know how many times I remember as a kid walking around and seeing, like, you know, free landfill or free dirt?
Yeah.
People would have giant piles of dirt in their front yard, like, come take our dirt. I'm like, nobody wants your dirt.
Yeah, but it's clean dirt. It's really clean dirt. I drove all over
it. It's like, and they don't use like, hey, come take my free dirt. It's always like, come take my free, you know, free landfill or something. You know, what a pain in the ass.
Free fill dirt.
How many times I've filled like the recyclables bin? So we have like the green waste bin. Like my green waste bin has been filled with dirt like on numerous occasions.
And it's like, what is it supposed to have like grass in normally?
Yeah, grass and clippings. It goes in the landfill. It goes into like the compost. Yeah. Like, so you can put dirt in it, but I don't think they expect you to put like 250,000 pounds of dirt.
Because I've done that before, and the guy's come to move it, and he's like,
"No, we have
this
robots.
Is like a ton in weight. That's not grass," and they've refused to take it.
We have trucks that are like fully automated.
I don't know what's going to happen in my house because I think they've got a drone set up over my house watching everything I'm doing right now. I think they're just going to drive by next week, right? Oh, the other thing that infuriated me about it is they clean the streets once a month, and of course they couldn't clean in front of our house because I had a huge pile of dirt.
Way to go there, dirt devil.
And that's when you get it from the other boss. You know, it's what? They couldn't clean our street because what? Because I had the dirt out there. They couldn't clean the dirt. No. You know, it's just that kind of thing. It's just great. Great shit.
Hey, one last shout out to Tech Unplugged next week, 23rd and 24th in Amsterdam, if you're around. Mark, is it right that are you guys still buying the beers on the 23rd?
Yes.
So what I want to know is
just a couple of rounds. I don't know how this works. You know, I'm a little bit intimidated by the thought of buying beers in Amsterdam. Just something about that.
But even if it's just the first round, but no, what I was thinking was, buying them, you should be arriving there early with your kit, right? And you should be like, no, I'm just kidding.
Brewing, yeah, I would have had to have gotten there like, you know, 8 weeks ago. 8 weeks ago to brew beer for the thing. That would be fun to do, but I think people would just, I don't know. We're not ready. We're not ready for Amsterdam yet.
No, no worries. Okay, gents, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
As always.
Yeah, listeners, thanks for listening in. If you've got any insights on that NSX and vSAN stuff earlier, go on, swing over to the LinkedIn group and let us know, because I for one am dead curious how much of it is just hype and how much of it is really cutting it in the real world. I've no doubt that it will do in the future, right? I just want to kind of get a finger on whether it is now anywhere. So help us out there.